This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to this week's episode of The After Show, brought to you by Way Too Much Caffeine. How much caffeine did you have over the long weekend?
Oh, question.
Did you have more because it was the long weekend or less?
Always more.
Yeah, I agree. Always more. Because you just have more time, right?
Of course.
So you chew up time by being caffeinated. But it's kind of a double-edged sword because then you're like, you're just way too jacked to do nothing.
Also, we had daylight saving change here.
Oh, I hate daylight saving change. Honestly, we're having this discussion. I'm glad you brought this up. This is not where I wanted to start the show, but it's what I want to get into. Daylight saving is stupid. Do you agree?
Half the country really doesn't like it. The Queenslanders. I don't think Queensland even does it.
Okay, hold on. Before we even get to that, do you know South Australia is half an hour behind us? Half an hour.
I don't think I've ever really called anyone.
We have
from
like
there.
Four. We have four time zones in Australia right now.
Yeah, four time zones.
Half an hour. How?
It's unnecessary.
How annoying do they want to be?
I thought nobody was half an hour.
That's what
off.
I thought. I thought it was always
Everyone
on the hour.
An hour.
They're half an hour off. You know what I'd be? If we had any business in South Australia, I'd just be like, guys, it's too difficult now.
Yeah.
I'm going to miss all the meetings, all the Zoom calls. I don't know why they did the half an hour thing. It just makes
well,
no
I'll
sense.
Tell you, if you run podcasts, time zone this time of year is horrific.
Yeah,
because
it's so annoying.
I'm always scheduling podcasts. And the worst bit is that they change twice.
What do you mean?
So like I might book a podcast a month ahead. Both time zones change. We go into daylight saving,
and
they go out.
Yeah. I mean, I saw the reasons. I was reading about it. You know, the reason they did daylight savings was back in World War One, they were doing it to save electricity. That was like some thing to save electricity by making the daylight hours longer or something at night. But then they've run the new data and they're testing on it now. And now it actually doesn't make a difference.
Yeah,
so for that,
yeah.
So that now it doesn't save any power.
It's stupid. And also, if you're into fitness, like you would basically have 6 months of the year where the 5:30, 6 a.m., like the very first class of the day would be in sunlight, which is beautiful. Instead, you get 4 weeks of the year.
Yeah.
All because of daylight saving.
Yeah. And, but the, what's so annoying about it for me is that so many people die during, do you know that? The increased deaths?
The only one I know is, there's more people die on the first day of daylight saving.
Yeah. The heart attacks. It's like a 24%.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's 24% increase in heart attacks.
Wait, why?
Reported heart attacks at hospitals.
Like, oh, I don't want to have daylight saving and it pushes them over the edge.
Man, I think they reckon it's the sleep, throwing off the lack of sleep.
Well, one I remember, it was in Matthew Walker's book, which was like, there's more car accidents the first morning after
that
saving because they slept less. But I think there is still slightly less deaths. It doesn't quite make up for it, but it makes up for it a little bit. You know, the hour you get, there's one night where you get more sleep, obviously.
Yeah.
And the next morning after that is like one of the safest mornings on the road.
Yeah.
Because people are just
I'm not sure.
More
yeah, because you go to bed an hour earlier, but you still get up an hour. But anyway, the shift apparently causes 24% increase in reported heart attacks.
Well, you know, I was nearly in that. I was nearly in that heart attack group because
got a heart attack.
I was closer because our first day was Sunday morning.
Yep.
Right, and then it was my brother's engagement party on Saturday night.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, it's like not ideal, but whatever. Like I was staying up later, and they're very Australian, so I was forced into drinking a lot more alcohol than I normally drink.
Which for you is two drinks.
And I was like,
not one.
I was like, okay, fuck, it's not too bad. I got 7:30 session the next morning, but then that became a 6:30 session. The next morning.
Yeah.
And 6:30 session after like quite a few drinks and we go pretty hard on the Sunday mornings was, I could feel the heart beating out and that was definitely heart attack risk.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like daylight savings. It makes no sense. Just keep everyone on the same time because it's confusing. Logistics, we don't need more headaches in our life. So anyway, hopefully we'll get rid of that at some point. It has been, you know, they've actually had votes in different states to like take it out and keep it in and that's
why. Well, I think that's how Queensland got rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I would vote to get rid of daylight savings, 100%. It's just annoying.
Mm.
Just screws up your sleep. And then I can, you know, I feel it for a few days trying to readjust my body clock. But anyway, so I think we should quickly address this one thing. So a couple of weeks ago, we actually spoke about, remember we were spoken about truck drivers on the road?
Yes.
And
somebody got upset about it.
Yeah, we really, really ruffled some feathers. We want to apologize. We probably spoke a little bit out of term in terms of just not really, I guess, stepping out of our lane a little bit here and making some broad sweeping generalizations based off a couple of data points, which we're wrong about. And I definitely should say that, you know, we do have the truck drivers to thank. She's definitely right, this person. to thank for, you know, keeping our food supply going during the pandemic. So just an apology for, you know, ruffling some feathers there and I guess extrapolating out a few different, you know, one-off anecdotes to a generalization of the whole industry. But we definitely need truck drivers, whether their jobs will remain or not in 5-6 years. I doubt it, but at least for now, they kept the world going. So we do have a lot to thank them for. Anyway, so I've been watching the NBA finals. It's very different, right? So sport is obviously a lot different now. There's, you know, half-filled stadiums. I don't know what their capacity is at the moment. I think 50% in Sydney. I think 50%
yeah. capacity. Yeah, you can get a decent crowd. You can get like 40, 50,000.
Yeah. Anyway, so the NBA has like a full digital crowd. I don't know if you've seen it. So they zoom in and they put you on these big screens and they play ambient noise.
Wait, so you buy a ticket?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. And then, but you sit on the screen, right? So like you're just on your computer watching it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then they crop you out and they put you in the stand.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. But anyway, so they're playing the game and they've got like the ambient noise on the broadcast.
Yeah. I've seen the ambient noise on different sports.
Of like, yeah. And but the ambient noise is not in the arena. But they got the they got the MC, like the announcer. You know, so when they score, it's like LeBron James and all that going off and there's noise. And there's people cheering and stuff because there's, you know, there's people there. Not fans, but teammates and stuff like that. And they're big benches, right? You know, 20, 30 people on a bench. But what we were getting into the discussion as we're watching it, what would you prefer? If you were a player, would you want the fake ambient noise there of the crowd? Or would you want just in its more pure form and just have the ambient noise to the broadcast?
No, definitely fake crowd.
If you were there 100% playing. You reckon? Fake crowd. Fake noise. Crowd. Okay, but and then what if you're the viewer at home?
I would even want fake heckling.
And then what if you were the viewer at home, would you want fake would you want ambient noise or do you want just the sound of the
game? I watched a little bit of it with rugby. I preferred the ambient noise. I just noticed very clearly when the ambient noise was making a mistake.
Right.
And there were some moments where the ambient noise, where they would cheer when nothing was happening to cheer about.
Mm.
And that was extremely annoying.
Mm. Yeah, nah. I actually would prefer that. I do like it, but I actually want to know what's really going on. I don't want to hear the ambient noise. I'll tell you why, because the UFC doesn't have any ambient noise, right? They're just playing, they're fighting in empty stadiums and you can hear it and the fighters prefer it. They're like, it's just the most pure form of it. It's just like me against you. I can hear you breathing. I can hear you whining. I can hear when my shots land and my kicks and I can hear you flinch and all this sort of stuff. And I really like it. It's very pure. And I think that the problem is we'll never ever get another opportunity again to hear them play without the ambient noise. Do you know what I mean? As soon as they bring crowds back,
Bill Gates will start a new pandemic to boost sales of his vaccines.
Well, I mean, you'll never experience it again. Mm. And I just think it will have missed something out there.
Because I always think part of it is that that's what makes sports harder.
Mm.
Is that shit's gone wrong and it's so bad that you can't even hear each other talk. You know, you're on a team. Yeah, again. Yeah. It's part of like, I think the chaos of a competition is like there's an opponent and there's also a crowd.
Yeah. So what are you saying?
I'm saying the best people, like that is part of it. I think something's missing if you've like taken out the crowd. That's another hurdle the best people overcome.
Yeah, I know. But I'm saying, but right now there's no crowd. So exactly. Just play without a crowd.
Yeah, I'm saying long term, that's why I think the crowd is better. Because I think
I definitely think the crowd is better as well.
Like, it is more pure. And I guess you could almost say like, hey, you get more directly to who is the best player. You do, yeah. Like you take out the crowd, you're more seeing who is just the best player.
Yeah.
Right, or the best fighter, whatever the sport is.
You're taking out less variables.
Yeah, but I think the crowd is a sick variable that the best players work with.
I still think the crowd is, like, you still want the crowd over not the crowd. But I just think for this moment in time, I would rather not have a crowd and I would just have the pure noise just because we're only going to get it for
a unique opportunity.
Yeah, we're only going to get it for like the end of this season. And so, yeah, I think if the NBA is listening to the My Muscle Project, then why not? Why not? Just take it out for a couple of games just so we can hear like just the feet on the floor and the squeaking and the calls because there's all that stuff that you'll never hear, right? Unless you're like right down on the floor in the game. Like if you've been to live sports, you can hear it a bit more. But yeah, you definitely...
Do they zoom in like the celebrities on the get courtside tickets?
Yeah, yeah.
So like Jack Nicholls is there on the side?
Yeah, yeah. And like Snoop Dogg's in the crowd and all that sort of stuff. Other players are in there, yeah. No, it's quite... They're doing quite a good job. It would be interesting to see what elements of it they'll keep or like what elements of this change in sport they'll keep going forward. To be honest, I don't think they'll keep any of it.
It's like Zoom classes for like CrossFit gyms. Everyone's like, man, this is actually pretty good. Like, I think we might do this long term. And then it's like, pandemic's over. Fuck that shit.
Yeah, everyone back in the gym. Yeah, so I don't know what aspect of it they'll keep. But speaking of live sport, quick shout out to my brother who won his fight on the weekend. First victory in Auckland. I think everyone that's listened to the show knows that brother is a professional fighter in Auckland. So one fight, had a scary moment in the first, yeah. But ended up making his way through the danger zone and surviving, getting out of trouble. So, and then ended up absolutely destroying the guy's eye.
I don't know how common this is in fighting, but it was...
How many fights have you watched? Like, because I sent you the fight. Less than 10, you reckon? Cage fights?
Yeah, less than 10 where I've just sat there and watched the whole fight.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen heaps of highlights, but very rarely I just watched the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how unique this is. It was like nearly three... I counted 2 minutes 50 where he was just sitting on top of him, punching him in the face.
It was a little bit...
Which of the whole fight was like a third.
It's a long time to get punched. Look, sometimes... I was talking about this with one of my other friends who is watched the fight and is quite knowledgeable with fighting as well. The thing about reffing in combat sports is like you can do 1,000 things right and it's just the one call that you get wrong and there's a lot on the line. And so...
And the fear is to call it too early. That's the biggest mistake you can make,
right? Well, both. If you call it too early, people freak out. But if you call it too late...
Dude's dead.
Well, yeah. Or he has some irreparable damage, right? Like he might lose an eye or get like permanent brain damage or something. So it's a very difficult line to ride. And this particular ref, I've watched a lot of fights. I would have stopped it earlier. If I was the opponent now... Yeah, you guys haven't seen this, but this guy's eye... I mean, unless you follow me on Instagram, this guy's eye was obliterated. Like, he might lose his eye. Like, that's how bad it was. And, you know, you're in my brother's position. He's just trying to win. He's just trying to keep throwing elbows at this guy.
Yeah, well, I get it, right?
He's just trying to stop the fight.
If you stop, that's going to be your eye.
Well, yeah. You risk going another round. Like, you want to finish the fight and win, right?
It's going to be the opposite.
But I think at that point, you know, when the ref is clearly not doing their job...
Oh, then, so you think he did let it go too long?
I think so. Yeah, I think he let
it... Seemed pretty savage.
Yeah, I think he let it go a little bit too long. Sometimes people are too tough for their own good, right? Because the fighter can actually quit in that situation. They can tap and they can just stop.
Yeah, but like, I mean, it's like any sport, right? In that sort of state, you're going to push yourself very far. Yeah. You might not even be in the best state to tap.
Right,
if you're a bit dizzy and stuff.
Yeah, you're just covering up. You're just in fight or flight mode. But I think the responsibility falls on their coach and their corner to throw in the towel. Like that, I think that was a little bit irresponsible for them because that guy's eye is so, so messed up that, I mean, he could lose it.
Yeah.
You know? And that's, and I don't, I think that's either.
And you can't really fight with one eye, right? Like you lose too much vision.
There's some really good fighters that have fought without an eye, basically, like a fake eye. Michael Bisping is one of them. But I just think that, you know, when it comes to sports and.
You're also really running the risk there when you are down to one eye.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be fucking careful.
Oh, he copped a lot of shots in that area where he couldn't really see.
Yeah.
But look, I think that, it's hard being a ref. Like, it's really hard, especially in combat sports. So much on the line. You get so much heat if you call it early, so much heat if you call it late. I think in that situation, when you feel like your fighter's in true danger, it does kind of fall on the ref, the corner to call it. But, I mean, some corners are just... too tough for their own good as well. They're too proud. They don't want to like throw in the towel either. And they're less concerned about their fighter safety. So interesting because Eugene, who's the head coach and the owner of Camp's gym, he actually has lost three fighters, in training, in the gym, and then in the ring in combat. Like they lost their life and they're on like a mural at the gym. It's pretty cool. But I think that experience, those unique experiences has made him prioritize the fighter's health above all because that's the most important thing, right? Like speaking from my perspective, I would want to know that my brother's at a gym because you never know which kind of culture they're stepping into, right? Are they stepping into this old school hardcore culture? It's like sending a friend to a CrossFit gym, right? You want to know that the coaches there have their best interests and the health of that person first, above everything.
You don't want to send them to like CrossFit Mayhem.
Right, yeah. It's going to rip their back in half, right? Destroy their knees. you want someone that's responsible and knows at the end of the day, this person needs to come out of here better than what they walked in. And losing your life is obviously not that situation. So it's just reassuring for me and obviously anyone that knows my brother that he's in a situation where that head coach has been directly affected by those things. And that for him, obviously, the most important thing is it doesn't happen again to anyone. And it's an unknown sport, right? That shit can happen all the time. But, you know, there's all kinds of gyms out there where they just go, they go nuts in there. And that is not the most important
thing. They hang the mural of the athlete with rhabdo on the wall. Like, this will never happen again.
Yeah, they paint pukey on the fucking... on the sidewalk. But anyway, so tell me about what's this
oh yeah, baby interesting, myth interesting thing? One here. So I was actually had some extra time, was doing some reading on the weekend, and this was it was a book that tallied up like statistics on what parents tell their kids, right? It turns out only 30% I think roughly of what parents tell their kids actually is true, right? Okay. Kids obviously like believe a lot of it, and a lot of it they say is like you believe it for the rest of your life because you're so impressionable at that age. Interestingly, was a lot
at,
of them,
at what age is this roughly?
This is like before 5.
Okay.
But interesting, a lot of it was actually nutrition based, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I thought it was interesting because there was, I'll give you two examples. One, I'm like, okay, not surprised. The second one, I was like, man, I say that to people all the time.
Really?
And I've like never looked into the science of it and I was 100% wrong on it. So the first one is the 5-second rule. So, you know, parents are often like, oh, if you just like pick it up quickly.
Oh, the thing on the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if you look at the science of it, it fucking makes no difference. Like if you drop it for 2 seconds or a minute or 5 minutes, no difference.
Yeah.
Right? It's just whatever it has touched. It has touched. Yeah. Obviously, hours, then there's the temperature and it's been out for too long. But yeah, there's no magic to picking it up within 1 second.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if it's touched some shit, it's touched some shit.
I never believe that shit. You must have. You're retarded.
And the second one is actually like sugar high. So pretty much like everybody accepts. And I was always like looking at kids and I'm like, oh, they just like feed them sugar, right? Mm. They're like eating cake and Coke and they're going nuts, right? I'm like...
Yeah, I hear that one all the time.
Why do you think your kid's going nuts? He's had like 200 grams of sugar. He weighs 15 kilos. What do you expect? You know, and like, I'm like, my kid's not going to have that much sugar. Or if he is, I'm just going to deal with the consequences. Anyway, they've done so many studies on this.
Hmm.
It makes no difference.
Really?
It doesn't affect their behavior. And they've done like clinical trials and they've done like all the double blind. So like some kids are getting sugar. Some kids are getting like all the different sweeteners, like zero sugar, taste the same. And they do like a battery of tests on like, you know, concentration, just like reports on how subjectively you think their behavior is. And there's zero difference between the kids that have sugar and not.
Interesting.
Which I thought was crazy. The real point of it in the end was just like, the biggest misconception comes is because when they're having sugar, it's just oftentimes they go crazy. So it's like a kid's birthday party, right?
Yeah,
they're
just totally.
Going nuts or like you're letting them go wild so they eat whatever they want to eat and they're having a lot of fun. Whether that food has sugar in it or not makes zero difference.
Yeah, yeah. But that would that same science may not apply to adults as well.
These are just kids.
Yeah,
this is just kids. Yeah, they're looking at like, I think it was like less than 10-year-olds, all different ages in the studies. But because it's such a persistent one, and like I've always said it, like I tell people, I'm like, oh, like I'm a trainer, trust me. Like you don't want to have 200 grams of sugar. I'm jacked up.
Well, I still think you shouldn't though as well.
No, yeah. There's obviously diabetes.
Yeah.
Which is true and proven across.
Feed the kid sugar. I heard on the Mind Muscle Project, they don't get sugar high. Just feed him cake.
But yeah, like I would always, you know, I would be like 100% when I would tell people, definitely, I think it's going to affect their behavior.
Yeah.
But no, it doesn't.
That's crazy. Well, speaking of having too much extra time on your hands, I took on bouldering for the first time. And the only experience I've had with bouldering before, which was not really bouldering, is rock climbing. But you do it with the harness, right?
Yeah, bouldering is like no harness.
Yeah.
You just walk you out the wall incredibly hard.
Yeah. So the first, like when we used to do rock climbing as a kid, the bouldering section was like the hardcore section.
Yeah,
and it was like just a small part of the gym. But anyway, on the weekend, I went to this place that's all bouldering. I think bouldering's obviously picked up way more momentum.
Oh, 100%.
Because of the movies and stuff, like Honnold and stuff,
right? Yeah,
I was
like, oh, that looks easy.
Yeah. That looks cake. I'm going to give it a go. So I went to this place called... Blockhouse. It was actually right around the corner. It was being built right as we sold the Marrickville gym. So it's right around the corner. It's their third location. They got one in Canberra and they got one in Melbourne.
So it's just like mats, right? So you can climb and you can fall.
Yes.
Yep.
But they have built an amazing business. Mm. First of all, it's over $1 million to fit out easily. They got those giant fans on the roof. Each fan is like
big ass fans.
Yeah. Each one's like $100,000. They got three of them in there. So they got $300,000 just on fucking air circulation. And they got this massive fit out bathrooms. Crazy. Amazing staff, beautiful business systems. Whatever is behind this, whatever money, whatever operators, founders are behind this, you built an incredible business. And it's so much fun. Like it's actually a really enjoyable activity, I noticed, for people. And I think you've you know, got a really good business model when you've got a lot of different demographics of people in there, all really enjoying it. So you've got like some, you know, athletic people in there. You've got some people that go to the gym, like that, you know, have a lot of muscle. And then you've got people in there that don't, you know, people that are overweight, don't really care, just having a good time with their mates. But what's so good about the bouldering is just the system at which you can do it. So they have like this full grading system, and they've set up obviously all the different climbs on the wall. And then as it's kind of like progressing through levels. So you do like all the blues, then you like do all the reds, whatever, purple, yellow, whatever the shapes after that. But what I liked about the system is you could kind of see as you move through the gym where people start to get stuck on different things. And then like quite a lot of people obviously gather around the sort of the middle section. They progress pretty quickly through the first beginner stuff and they get stuck in the middle. But what was cool is there were some more advanced climbers there. As I kept trying this one ascent, I couldn't do it. And they like gave me some tips, which was really cool. But man, by the time I got to the end of it, is because you're basically limited by your grip strength.
Oh, 100%. Right? Your grip strength and your tolerance for just hand pain.
Yeah, like I started going, oh, why is people taking such long rests? It's easier, I'll just work faster. Nah, after a certain point, after you try some walls where you're at maximal grip strength and you're like really pinching down on your fingers,
the session's done.
That's it. Like I tore like a little bit on my finger there, and it was getting really brutal. And even like some of the most advanced climbers that were there, like I saw them, they had like three or four cracks at a certain wall and then they stop and then like they go do some training because they know for certain elements, it's like a one rep max, right? So there's only so many times you can attempt it when they're like, nah, I don't have it anymore.
Well, that's like, because I did a little bit of bouldering, I suck at it. Same thing. It's like if you go to the gym, you get very strong at the gym, but if you only ever do like regular barbell training, like you're very, very unprepared.
Oh, yeah.
For bouldering, you know, it's like, so you just don't really train your fingers in any way.
There's also just, while I was noticing some of the best climbers is, obviously they're super skinny.
Yes.
Like it's a mandatory.
Yeah, they've skipped like every leg day.
Every leg day. And they've grown their hair extremely long. But one thing that's definitely evident about climbers is they do have all these techniques that make it way easier for them. You know what I mean? So like as this woman was giving me tips, she's like, you are climbing this ascent. She's like, you're strong, but you are doing it the hard way. It's just like, I guess when you watch people at the gym and they're lifting, let's say they're doing an Olympic lift and it's just like all arms, right?
Reverse curl in the clean.
Yeah. And you're like, well, that's really heavy. You're super strong, but you could do way more weight if you just had the right technique. Because it's all about like pushing in certain areas and then pulling in other areas rather than just like holding on for dear life.
But it does make you appreciate it even more, like the Alex Honnold movie.
The
guy that climbs the mountain. Because if you do bouldering, your forearms, like you, I don't know how long you did it for, but I usually find like after half an hour, it's over. Like I'm like, I just, unless you take really big breaks, I'm like, I can't do anymore. Like my everything kills. I can barely hold like a can of drink in my hand. I don't even know I can drive home.
Each fingertip has its own heartbeat.
And how long was he doing that climb for in the movie? It's got to be
hours, took most, right? I think it was 7 or 8 hours, I think. That's nah, it's crazy. You know, later that night, I watched the Dawn Wall again. You know the Dawn Wall?
Yeah. That was the even better climbing movie that we did review.
Yeah, that was on with Tommy Caldwell and that other guy. That's where they go. They do that one ascent. It takes like 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's an even harder wall than what Alex did, except they obviously use ropes. So
yeah.
Different.
But it's like the appreciation you have for it. It's such a great contrast because I think that makes any movie better, right? Or any sport better when you can play it and 100%. You can relate to it.
10 times
better. And so after that experience in the gym and I was looking at the things they were holding on the rock face, I'm like, that's not even a thing. How do you even hold on to that? That's not even a thing.
It's this tiny deviation in the wall. This is a little bump in the wall. They're like, oh yeah, cool. Great for my hand.
Here's one speck of rock that is just out of place. I'm going to stick my foot in it and hold my body weight up there. It's absolutely incredible. So now that bouldering was really fun. Expensive, but good fun. I think it takes a special kind of personality to get, I think, really quite obsessed with bouldering. You know when there's, you know, as the sort of tip of the spear emerges in any sort of sport, you kind of see the personality type. Yeah. I would say that's the most closely linked to like a jiu-jitsu or like hiking personality type competitor. Is hiking a sport?
I don't know, but I once did go to like I went past like a rock climbing throwdown. It was very similar to like a CrossFit throwdown. Like different personalities, a lot skinnier, a lot more energy drinks flowing around than like whatever, paleo bars.
Yeah.
And more jacked people with tattoos.
Yeah.
There was definitely longer hair, a lot skinnier, average weight would have been 50% of a CrossFit throwdown. Oh, yeah. But it was really similar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, people out there like doing it for the love, like just frothing over like minutia technique. And if an expert rolled in, probably said they all suck.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. No, that's before we get to the list of the questions, the our mate Luke Star of Star Strength, he tore his Achilles, I think it was 12 weeks ago, 11 weeks ago, something like that. So he's back walking now.
But he had the surgery straight away.
Straight away. So apparently he had, the physio said, and they deal with Achilles tendon ruptures all the time, the fastest rehab she's ever seen. And I was thinking, okay, what is it about this guy that makes him such a machine? I think it's just that when he does his rehab, he does it like better than anyone else. Because think about like some of the rehab stuff that you start to do. It's like, it's pretty boring. It's like, cool, we're going to step over this hurdle and then step back. And he's like, I'm going to do that 1,000 times to death, you know? And he does everything perfect. And then he trains his upper body so hard. So he's staying super healthy, right? He's staying in the optimal zone of health. And I think he's pushing his body. And so it's getting way more nutrients, way more blood flow. Whereas most people snap their Achilles, they fucking lie on their back for however long, right? They don't do upper body training. So that kind of makes the average recovery time a lot slower. So I think that definitely when it comes to like a major surgery rehabilitation thing, it just shows if you can really train hard in whatever you can train, despite your limitations, I think you can come back a lot faster than people think. Because he's back walking. The other day he was like in a boot and then I saw him again. Now he's walking. Next thing you know, he's fucking doing burpees and he's doing ski leg and stuff. It's crazy.
It's the way people look at injuries. Like it's, in some ways it's like, how long will it take me to get back to full strength? In some ways it's like, how long will it take you to get strong?
Yeah.
Depends how hard you work at it,
yeah.
How smart you are, what program you follow, how your nutrition is, like all those factors. It's very similar with injury.
Yeah.
Just somehow with injury, because obviously it's a bit different, people like take out the responsibility aspect of it.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, you know, it is what it is. And in some ways it is what it is, but there is an enormous variation.
Yeah.
And that's mostly going to come down to work. And it's work that's, yeah, not the sexiest work.
Yeah, no, totally.
It's like ankle rotations and, you know, soft tissue work.
Yeah, it's the most not fun stuff. All right, before we jump into listener questions, I posted a photo on the Instagram over the weekend. The worst whoop tan line of all time.
On yourself?
Yeah, it's so bad that I really considered like potentially even not wearing the whoop for a bit. But then what has become so fun about whoop is people are like so competitive with it. Yep. It is now a thing at the gym. So we've been handing out more whoop bands at the gym. More clients are wearing them. It has become this, everyone has gotten into these little WhatsApp groups and they're posting whoop scores. They're screenshotting stuff. They're on the leaderboard. I tell you what, getting more people on the whoop that you know that you train with makes whoop more fun because you can do the same workout and you can look at each other's stats. You can wake up in the morning and see who got the most sleep. You can see who's the most recovered. You can, you know, post all kinds of data. So I just think that if you are on the whoop train, 100%. I mean, you can join our leaderboard, the Mind Muscle Project one. There's some absolute beasts on there. But you should also get a few friends on it and make your own little leaderboard. Like we got some small leaderboards in there with 10, 12 people. And it's super competitive, but super fun and engaging.
Yeah, it's awesome. Definitely the Mind Muscle Project whoop leaderboard I check all the time. Some people in there that...
Andrew Papp.
Obviously, Andrew Papp, I know he cheats. I know he puts the whip band on a dog and lets that dog run around and get 20 strain every day. But we should do some shout-outs. There are some serious beasts in there. But yeah, if you have clients, I really recommend getting your clients on it. And if you have friends with it, it is super motivating.
Oh, yeah.
And I just love the fact that, I mean, there's been this shit in the past, right? There's been heaps of things where you can like track and who's working harder, but there hasn't been one that just takes recovery into it as well.
Mm.
So there's like, okay, bro, you did that, but your recovery's terrible.
Yeah, but also ones that are like not just gimmicky. Like whoop is super legit, right?
Yeah, it's not just like steps.
Yeah.
And there's been heart rate before as well, but it kind of puts everything into it.
Yeah, I mean, there's some goofy stuff out there, but yeah, whoop's the most legit of all. The technology is amazing. So anyway, if you guys are not on the whoop train, the best place to go is whoop.com and then our code is mindmuscle. That's one word, mindmuscle. When you check out, it's going to get you 15% off. So head there, whoop.com and use that code mindmuscle. One word when you check out.
I'll tell you one last thing. One last thing you'll get good at is, and I've never done this, and I think it's only now because I've worn the whip for so long, is you get pretty good at using heart rate in your cardio training. So like now, say I go for a run. Before in the past, I could never do this. I can be like, oh, I want to do like around 140 to 150 beats. And I can get it pretty much exactly.
Because
I've just done so many now and looked at my whip straight after. I like know almost exactly how to hit a heart rate range.
Yeah.
You know, which I never ever could think of before because every type of cardio is different.
Yeah.
Like rower or skier. Like skier for me, like jacks my heart rate the highest. And like now, having done it for so long. Because
you don't do it properly, bro.
Mostly. Also because I'm so short, I can barely reach the handles.
No.
But
it's because you squat during.
But now, yeah, if you actually do heart, it's actually giving me more of an appreciation for that. People that use their heart rate a lot for training. I always thought, I was like, it's kind of silly because it changes so much. But once you really get into it, it is a good way.
To
kind of set goals in terms of effort.
Cool.
Okay, cool, guys. We've got some good listener questions. This first one is a listener who's on the same topic. They're using the Whoop Band. Name is Molly Wilmot. They're fit and they train very often. However, when they go for even just a light jog or a cruisy jog, their heart rate is high, up to 170. Why is that?
Yeah, we looked at this a while ago. I can't remember who the coach's name was, but they had this thing. It was the heart rate window. And actually, they said the difference between your, your maximal heart rate or your 80% heart rate and your resting heart rate actually was a bigger determinant of fitness than people who had a really small 80% heart rate and resting heart rate window. So actually having a big window, a low resting heart rate, and then a high kind of 80, 90% output is actually a good sign of fitness. At the end of the day with this stuff, if you go up to 170 while you're running, but you're like smashing it, then you just have a higher resting, like you just have a higher, whatever, maximal heart rate.
There's definitely massive variation. Like even huge. I remember when you and me would train together, we would do a set, I'd be at like 160, you'd be at 180.
I was more of an outlier than anyone else.
Yeah, and it would be, like, I can tell it's feeling the same for both of us.
Yeah, like, remember we used to do those running intervals, and then this is, at some point, we're using some different, I think we're just using a Polar heart rate.
Yeah, we had Polar.
And we had, like, a team of, like, 6 or 7 people. This is what we're training for the CrossFit Games, and we were just doing, like, 400s. And 400s with a decent amount of rest, but basically what the guy programmed at the time was run, and then you didn't start your next 400 until your heart rate came down under a certain amount.
Yeah, it was like under 140, and if it didn't get down there in the allotted time, your session was over.
Yeah. I like never got down.
Yeah.
I like came
you did
in
like one set.
I came in first, waited, and then everyone came in after me and then left before me. And I was like, well, this is stupid because I'm not tired. Like, I'm obviously fresh. And so that's when I kind of knew, okay, when people give heart rate zones to work in, it's more of a generalization, and what works for you is going to be different. So if you're at 170 but you feel like you're, you know, barely working hard, doesn't mean you're not fit.
Yeah, there, I think there is also, particularly because you just mentioned running, we had a show on this as well, is this, you may also just suck at running, which is why I find, so you just, because you're not very good at running, your heart rate jacks up, you don't know how to run at a cruisy pace, so your heart rate's really high, and you need to like get better at running so that you can do like aerobic running, which is a lot of people struggle with, particularly if you've done CrossFit before. Okay, Jay Finch, techniques to maintain fitness or minimize loss of fitness on long holidays. Man, I don't know. You're the only person doing a long holiday right now. Fuck,
well,
where do you live?
Well, I mean, I think we're pretty good, well experienced with this. I mean, our US podcasters, they're 2 weeks, right? So they're not crazy long, but
they're stressful.
Yeah, they're stressful, and we're so time poor in them that we have done quite a few different variations. I remember one on our first trip. We were staying at that guy's place. I can't remember his name. And we had about, I think, 40 minutes before he cooked dinner for us. And we hadn't worked out all day.
Yeah.
And so we just did like sprints up the street, like push-ups into sprints or something like that. That was pretty cool. And that was just like, we came in super sweaty. I ate dinner like just
I remember we pushed it so hard, getting the session in before dinner, that we did 2 minutes rest, and I got in, I sat down to start eating, and then the buzzer went off to do another interval because we so quickly got to dinner.
But I think that the point with that story is that, you know, sometimes you just have to do whatever you need to do. Like, you have to let go of the fact that you're on a program and you need to stick to something, because if in any case, I think sometimes trying to stick to a program is worse off. You can actually put your body in a situation it's not ready to train with. I'll give you an example. On our trip to Miami a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, I was trying to maintain my numbers on this powerlifting program that Kyle was running for me at the time. And I remember trying to hit my percentages on the back squat the day before we got on the plane.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. And I hit all the percentages, but it was maybe a 7, supposed to be a 7 RP. It was like a 9 RP, right? Because your body's like adjusting, you're just not getting the good recovery, good sleep, good nutrition, all that sort of stuff. But I hit the numbers, so I was like, oh, I'm stoked, right? And then I get on the plane, and obviously then you're like, what, 12, 14 hours upright? And my back was in so much pain after that. I think it's like what the thing that tipped it over the edge, because the next training session, that's when my back went.
Mm.
So then I tried to get back on the bar. I think it was like 100 kilos. I was coming up out of it. I'd rested like 2 or 3 days after that plane trip. And then that's when my back went. And since then, it's been having issues. And that was 3 or 4 years ago. So I think there's something to be said about, okay, doing what is realistic, doing your best with like a small amount of time, and just not being too fixed to like a certain program.
Yeah, I remember I was doing CrossFit with another CrossFit competitor. I think we're in Bali. And I was like, oh, what are the numbers? He's like, hey, here's the numbers from the program, but you want to put your holiday weights in. And he's like, yeah, no, it's the thing. Like, you want to take like 20-25% off all the weights for holiday weights.
Yeah.
I was like, it's actually spot on. Because I remember I hurt my shoulder as well once. I mean, I was traveling. It was really just because it was like different bar, like maybe didn't have as much torque as I normally have. So it just felt heavy.
Mm.
And my positions were probably worse than normal. And I was just trying to keep up, you know, with the program. And it's just not a good idea. You're almost never going to do the same when you're traveling on a holiday. So the way we end up usually doing it is, number one, we just prioritize protein intake every day on a mission to hit or even go over our protein intake for the day. Anything else that's good on nutrition is like a bonus.
Yeah. That's just like, and hydration. Water. Yeah.
Stay hydrated, get enough protein. Done that. It's like basically a win for the day when you're traveling. I generally think if you can maintain 50% of what you do when you're at home, you're going to be pretty good.
Yeah. And then I think it's like one of those, you know, sometimes you just have to have no expectation that you're going to train. And then if the opportunity presents itself, get in as much as you can. Mm. So like, for example, I think we went probably like 3 or 4 days without training, but then we landed in Mark Bell's gym. And we just did like a mega session. We did like, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours of training. We just like every machine, we did every different thing. Like we just smashed ourselves because we just knew, hey, we don't know if we're going to get any training in. You know, if the last 2 days were any you know, signal of what's to come, it's like completely chaotic. It's completely unknown. You're not going to train and then delay a podcast because you were training.
Yeah.
The priority is there to do the interviews, right? Or the priority maybe on your holidays is to relax and chill out. So you don't want your training to interfere with that too much. So just kind of make the best of each opportunity if you can. Sometimes for some of our clients, so the advice that we give them is, you know, when you wake up in the morning, you do something really short. And I think that some people think that half an hour is short. You can go shorter than that. You can go downstairs and be like, all right, cool. You're going to do 10 burpees on the minute for 10 minutes. And that's going to be your workout for today. And that just keeps, it's not going to make you super fit. Yeah, you might lose a bit of fitness or whatever.
But damn, you feel better than doing zero.
Yeah, and then like sometimes it's just about doing something and keeping the habit, keeping the routine, keeping the momentum. Like even now, we had a long weekend. I didn't do much outside of that bouldering and a workout on Saturday morning. And I can already feel I've lost a little bit of momentum and I just don't feel as enthusiastic to train. And I think there's a lot to be said about just maintaining your momentum while you're training. So even if it doesn't feel like nothing compared to what you've done before, even if it's just a mobility session, just keeping something in your day where it's like, this is my exercise time, helps to maintain that momentum. And we know laws of inertia, it's easier to keep something moving than it is to get something from a zero, from a standstill to moving.
Okay, next question. Yancy, Alyssa, what fitness event / competition would you guys still want to compete in?
Yeah, it's a good one because I haven't competed in a long time. I think even you've... I mean, the most recent thing I competed in was like Sunday night basketball in a league. I love that.
Mm.
I love that. But if it's a fitness competition, to be honest, I think the closest thing I'll come to is probably professional bodybuilding show.
Is that a fitness?
Nah.
Is that, that count as a fitness show?
No, I don't know. You definitely have to train for it.
I think
it's probably going to be a marathon, I reckon.
Mm.
Marathon swim. No, I'm joking. No, I reckon I'm going to run a marathon next. I really think I am. I just got to get my knees back.
Well, I'll tell you, I think there's different types here and it's interesting the way it goes. So there's like all the endurance types events.
Triathlons.
Yeah, that type of stuff. Run, swim. The only thing they're awesome. The only thing I don't like about them, or I don't find it as gratifying, is that you tend not to compete with anybody. So say you do a marathon, a half marathon, bro, it's like you against you. You're never like, I want to win this round. Unless you're like fucking good at running, you ain't winning shit. You know, like almost no one turns up to the New York Marathon to win, right?
Yeah, so, but who wants to battle someone for like 3.5 hours?
That's exhausting. Sounds horrific. But that, and I guess that is, if I look back on, say, the old CrossFit style fitness competitions, that's what I enjoyed the most. Was just, even if I wasn't, often, you know, most of them I would be very close to winning or winning, but even if I wasn't, then I would pick out somebody like, I would love to be that person, you know, and say if I knew I couldn't win, there was still like a real element of...
Even though they don't know that you...
It doesn't matter, they don't know. Well, I usually let them know at some point, but there's still that element of competition. So I think that And that's, I guess, probably something unique that I think the more fitness CrossFit style competitions have brought to the flavor. Yeah, I think definitely probably one. I think the endurance ones are still good. You against you is still awesome, right? Still super enjoyable. But someone that can do good, I think fitness competitions, that the last one I did was like the Tribal Clash one that was outdoors. Somebody can do good quality competitions that are like in a really good environment like that, not just like at somebody's gym.
Yeah.
At somebody's gym is just, I don't know, it's just, you just get so over it, and it's so similar to what you do when you go to the gym every single day that it's just not very exciting. Anything that's more of like a destination is, I think, what is awesome.
I would, at some point, I think I wanted to do a weightlifting comp. Like, I think that was something that crossed my mind, just because I'm not really interested in powerlifting comp, because I would not only suck tremendously, but definitely get injured training for it. But yeah, I just think that sometimes when you, and we've talked about this before, when you put deadlines in the calendar, you definitely err on the side of injury than on the side of health, because you're trying to meet a deadline, so you're ignoring injuries, which is fine. Look, sometimes that's just the price you got to pay to get the volume in to get ready to run a marathon. But I think it just really depends. Yeah, I think it really depends like where we are in our life. Like, you're a new dad, and I think the next thing you're going to start training for is like, you know, a marathon necessarily. But I think that, I think more than anything is, I always want to be in a position athletically, fitness, health-wise, that if something was to present itself, even though I wouldn't put my best performance in, I could do it.
Yes.
So if someone said, hey, we're all going to sign up for a triathlon in 2 weeks, can you do it? I'd be like, it's going to suck, but yeah, I can do it. Like, I have enough base fitness. I have enough training. I'm not just doing one thing. I'm not just powerlifting or just bodybuilding, that I can't do it. And that's, I think, a good reason I keep to be able to jump in and throw myself into any new challenge, like bouldering on the weekend, right? If I was only doing bodybuilding training, probably would. I mean, I could do bouldering, but I wouldn't be as confident. But because I do a lot, you know, gymnastic stuff and handstands and fitness and all that stuff, like, you like taking on a new challenge, seeing what you can do, because you feel capable. And I think that's what that's kind of really the best gift we could give any of our clients, right? Is get them out of pain, get them strong, get them athletic, and make them feel confident and capable. How you look will follow afterwards. But that just means that anytime something comes up, if you're like, hey, I feel like running a marathon, you could probably run a marathon. You know, I could probably run a marathon now. I'd get fucking blow my right knee out to all hell and probably need a surgery. But fitness is there. Done enough running recently. Got the shoes, obviously the most important thing. And yeah, you just got to, you know, you do hard enough workouts that you build some mental toughness. I think probably that's another element to it, is
definitely,
if you're not doing any sort of like hard cardio, you have no confidence yourself,
to push yourself.
Yeah.
Like, man, I'm going to quit when it gets hard.
Yeah. Like, if you only do bodybuilding. And
you probably will quit.
100%.
Yeah, you probably will.
Or if you do powerlifting, like, your tolerance for extended exercise is extremely low. You're not training your mind. You're training your mind to just have a really high output for a very short period of time, which is obviously great for that. But yeah, if there's an extended period, hours and hours of doing something, it's a whole different ballgame. Until you've been there, you can't just pretend you're going to do it, because it's very unlikely that you can. It's just going to feel really tough. But yeah, I think most likely thing to come up for me will be a marathon.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I'll leave one last point, which is interesting, which is, I think in the past, you know, I think a lot of people have this where you have like competition, like, man, I always train hard when I've got a competition, right? And then you see someone that just trains really hard, in really good shape, but no competition, it's on the deadline. You're like, oh, well, you know, they're just like wasting their time. Like, what are you even training for? I have definitely shifted my perspective on that. I almost think now, if I see someone training really hard with no competition in mind, sometimes it can be like a weird exercise obsession, but very often I'm like, I almost have more respect for you,
because
you are just pushing yourself purely on yourself, you know? Whereas, like, man, to be honest, man, it's actually easier to turn up for training when you have to.
So much easier.
And you got a team and you got a deadline.
It's a crutch.
Like, you do it, right? That gets you there. The dude is like, no, up at, you know, super early in the morning, or I train late at night, just for myself and just to be an animal. Like, yeah, maybe I'll put a competition on the calendar. I could do it anyway because I'm in such good shape.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck, that's another level.
No, I agree. Because
you can do both.
No, I agree. I'm glad you brought that up. I've seen so many people that use competitions as a crutch to train hard. I'm like, if you didn't have this, I would out-train you because you don't have just the internal motivators of pushing yourself and staying healthy and staying hungry for no reason but to be a badass. Like, yeah, you
could be tough. Like, no one wants to be weak just for no reason.
And I've seen that. As soon as COVID hit and comps went away, I saw people that train their ass off get fat, get out of shape, get demotivated, stop training, stop looking after their body, stop eating well. I'm like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Are you really not, you know, are you not a professional enough? Are you not disciplined enough to be able to maintain all these habits just for the sake of being healthy? Competitions will come up again, but come on, do you really need a comp? Are you like, it almost to me, it feels like exercise immaturity.
Well, the best one was that, I don't know, I don't really follow fighting, but there was, I remember when COVID hit, there was the fighter that like maintained his weight.
Yeah. He ended up getting his face smashed in, but
always the case.
He lost his win streak, but yeah, there was
a guy like that, right?
Yeah,
like
he weighed in on his weight, even though their fight got cancelled.
Yeah, and it's just like, because that's got to be.
Yeah, he's a psycho.
It's like, yeah, he's a psycho. Dude's got good discipline.
Yeah,
right?
He's extremely disciplined. He's a badass. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I know totally. I think that there's a lot to be said for someone like that just stays in really good shape for the sake of just staying in good shape. I have a lot of respect for those people.
Okay, cool.
I try to do that.
Yeah. That will be us.
All right. Before we shift, though, we're actually pretty excited. True Coach is we're going to be speaking with the founder, or one of the founders, the two founders.
He's the main founder.
Right.
He started.
We'll be speaking to him soon. So there'll be an interview out, I assume, on
in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah. So I'm very excited to speak to him. For now, though, if you guys, you've been using a lot of different software programs to maintain your client base. I would say now is the perfect time. True Coach is an amazing software. It's how we use it with all our clients at Creature. It's definitely something I would be investing in. If you are using Excel sheets to program for individual clients, if you're transitioning and you want to make side money or you want to like grow your online business, True Coach is the tool to do that if you're coaching clients one-on-one. It's a great way to use templates as well. If you've got a bunch of different clients that have similar goals, you can kind of group them into templates. It's really affordable. And it just makes a lot of sense. It's really intuitive. It's really easy for your clients to use as well. And if you are the client, it's really easy for you to use and communicate with your coach. That is why we chose it to use with all our clients at Creature. We wouldn't be using shit software. So you guys can get a free trial. If you go to truecoach.co and you sign up, we now have a code. The code is MMP50. So MMP50, just those five characters. MMP50 when you check out. And that's going to, same thing. It's going to give you a free trial. For 2 weeks, and it's going to give you a discount off your next month. So that's at truecoach.co. So it's the number one coaching software platform in the world.
Yeah, and I mean, even if you are the client, I mean, this is how actually I got started with True Coach way before they sponsored the podcast, any of that stuff, was I was just sick of like using a Facebook group. And I just went to my coach and I was like, hey, can you just start using True Coach to make my life easier? So, and it's so much better now than it used to be as well. So even if you are the client, I would recommend either getting your coach to do it. I mean, you can even just use it to program yourself. And if you give them the code, then you know, they can still save half of their first month anyway, right? So you still pass it on to them. But if you haven't tried it and you still use old Excel sheets or like groups, it is so much better.
Yeah, absolutely. So go check it out at truecoach.co.
Okay, speaking of coaches, that is the documentary we have this week. We warned you guys to watch it. It is called The Playbook, and it is, I want to say, 5 episodes in this first season where they just, each one features one really famous coach. So one sports team coach, and they deliver like 5 or 6 lessons from that coach from like the history of their sporting career.
I watched the first episode with the coach of the Boston Celtics that won in 2009. I can't remember his name. He's gonna kill me right now, but anyway,
Doc Rivers.
There we go. Doc Rivers, still a coach. He is coaching who's he coaching at the moment? I think he's still coaching the Celtics. I don't know, any NBA fan right now is screaming at me. But yeah, he's still an amazing coach. And I think what's really cool about coaching is because a lot of people listening to this are coaches, it's interesting to get insights into how coaches like to do things, how they like to set the culture. And did you watch this first episode?
Yeah, I watched the first two.
What's that African word that he used?
Oh, I can't remember it.
Yeah. So he's got like this, he uses like this, you know, in The Last Dance, they call it The Last Dance. That's the theme of the season, right? So he had like the theme of the team, or more like the culture of the team. And it was like this word, but it meant basically like all for one and one for all kind of thing. Like we're all in this together. We do everything together. And that's super cool. Like it's interesting just to see how one word, one piece of language can completely transform the culture of a team and everyone's attitude. And it just makes you realize that with all things, with all groups of people that come together, whether it's a business, whether it's, I know, community people, they just want to learn how to paint for the first time, whether it's kids playing tennis, whether it's a gym, it's all about the culture. It's all about the people there. It's all about the leaders within that culture and how they kind of set the values, set the beliefs, and just, I guess, really set the rules of how things are going to work in this huddle of people. And I think, you know, you can just get greatness when the team all works together. It's not about the individuals. It's really about this collective idea and belief system that helps elevate teams. And that's what he seems to do. It's got really nothing to do with him. It's really got to do with this people in the squad and I guess how they're going to make it all work together.
Yeah, it's awesome. So you get the basketball coach, you get the female World Cup soccer team coach, you get the coach of like Ronaldo and shit in soccer. And then there is one more, I think, a female coach.
Oh, yeah, NBA, Jose Mourinho.
Yeah, which I haven't watched yet. It's sick. Like, if you follow sports at all, coaching is definitely, it's got to be like the hardest job in the world.
Yeah.
Being a coach, right? Yeah. You always get hammered. I would like definitely include, you know, I always talk about like players are the real people, right? Like they're the ones like in the arena and they're sweating it and all that type of stuff. I would include the coach for most sports in those groups of people.
Yeah.
They are critical and they have so much skin in the game. I would say often more than a player on a team.
Mm.
You know, if a team loses, like an NFL team or an NBA team, they're not always just like, man, you are so responsible. Often they're like, man, you played really well, but you know, the rest of the team let you down.
Yeah.
For a coach, never.
Yeah, yeah.
If the team loses, it's all your fault.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the way it is. And often when you win, it's because the players did a good job.
Yeah.
You know, you take the responsibility and you're usually, the first person to get fired when things go really badly. If you're a good player, you stay on. Yeah. Right? They don't just fire you because the team isn't going well. So it's good. And I do think because they have to have so much leadership, they do often much more so than players and much more so than captains, I think have the best, they're like the best mentors you could get.
Mm-hmm.
Right? A really good coach. I think in America, they tend to have like the most respect for coaches out of anywhere in the world. But a really good coach, if you were to like get mentored by anyone, that's the person you want. Usually even more than an athlete.
Yeah, I've met so many American people. So many people we've interviewed. And a lot of them reference their high school basketball coach, their high school football coach.
Changes as
like
lives.
People that really mentored them and big brothered them through like a very important part in their lives. So I'm going to give it... Well, I watched the first episode. I really enjoyed it. I need to watch the Jose Mourinho one because I did support Chelsea way back in the day, 2005,
he's the Chelsea coach?
He was way back.
And then he went and coached in like Barcelona and stuff?
Yeah, he's coached basically everyone after that. So I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5. I imagine if I watch more of them, it'll only go up.
Yep. Yeah, I'm going to give it the same. 3.5 out of 5. I would start off with the first one. Really, really good. And man, this is like... Netflix just needs to keep making sure they have a budget for health, fitness, and sports-related documentaries to keep the flow coming.
Yeah, it is good. All right, guys. Thank you for tuning in. We've got Project Fitness coming out later this week. If you guys heard on Thursday previously, there was the first episode of Project Fitness, so check it out. I think we had 6 ways to increase your fitness, 6 non-training ways to increase your fitness. So pretty good one there. Definitely some stuff you're probably not doing. So definitely go check that out. If you haven't listened to that episode, I posted that last week. And then, of course, if you want to get on the waiting list for the program when it comes out, you can go to themymuscleproject.com/fitness. This one will be slightly different. We're going to actually release an 8-week program in the app, so you guys don't have to commit to a subscription. Of course, if you are subscribed as well, you will get all these extra bonus features and all this bonus content and guides and that sort of stuff as well. But if you just wanted to try an 8-week slice of the program, we'll be doing this for Project Fitness this time. But either way, go to themymuscleproject.com/fitness. And you can check out, or you can get on the waiting list so that you make sure you can get it straight away. So, guys, thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.